Welcome to Giant Cocktails, a podcast where two lifelong fans talk about the San Francisco Giants while drinking homemade cocktails. Now, here are your hosts, Ben and Matthew Henry.
Welcome back to another episode of Giant Cocktails. I am your host, Ben Henry, alongside my brother, the disenchanted diehard, Matthew. How you doing, Matthew?
I think out of all the superlatives that you've given me over the years, this one might be the most apropos, as they say.
Apropos. Did you know that word ends with an S? Shouldn't it be apropos?
Sure. All I know is that Disenchanted Diehard definitely is, I think, sounds like me. I'm a diehard Giants fan and indeed a bit disenchanted.
Yeah, I've noticed, we talked about this on Thursday.
We did.
We went through this.
This weekend didn't help though, Ben. This weekend didn't help.
What are you talking about? This weekend was a beautiful weekend with plenty of reasons to have hope for this team. And that's why I thought we had to continue this discussion from last Thursday, because I listened back to that show and I thought that I said in a lot of astute things, as I do, you know,
sure,
because I'm the smart brother, as everybody knows. And what I said was some really, you know, cool things, which is just sort of like, just because probability says something, you know, will probably happen doesn't mean it should happen or it will happen, right? Everybody says this team has to play better or the offense has to be better. And I was like, no, it doesn't. And I realized, Matthew, just because I was right logically doesn't mean that I said the right thing emotionally. So what I wanted to do was support you through this crisis of faith that you're having by examining the Diamondbacks series and showing to you why it demonstrates that this team is good and that you should have hope for the future.
Did you not see the 17-1 game? Were you like...
pish posh. Listen, that's just, you know what? The 17-1 game actually is more proof that I'm right, that this team is good.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
All
I
right.
Can't wait to hear it either, because I didn't know I was going to say that. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to prove it to you.
Yes, because you're the smarter one.
That's right. I'm going to do it to you. Because here's the thing, Matthew. Like, I'm the pessimist. That's my role on the show. It's the way easier job, and it's a lot more fun. And so this has to stop. This has to come to an end. You have to go back to being the positive one so I can go back to being the negative one, because this is a bunch of bull hockey.
Okay, so you've got ulterior motives here.
That's right.
You need
that's
to
right.
convince
of course,
me to be
positive
again.
I always have ulterior motives. I am a horrible person.
Oh, no argument right, there.
Now, since everybody just learned a lot about me, Matthew, I want to learn a little bit more about you. And so I have a question for you. And what our listeners may not know is that in our show notes, we call this the icebreaker question. And when I originally launched this show, it was really about learning more about you, Matthew, and then the listeners wouldn't learn anything about me. And I've asked you strange questions like, you know, do you fold your underwear and other things? But today I have a meta question for you, Matthew. But it is also actually the question.
Okay.
So it's meta and it's real. It's meta real. It's meta realistic. Do you like icebreaker questions? Like when you go to a conference or you're meeting a bunch of new people or you're at camp or whatever. You know how we all go to camp.
Yes, actually, I do like them. I am a people person. So I actually don't mind. Any excuse to, you know, get out and know somebody and get to meet them, I'm down for it. So I actually don't mind icebreaker questions in general. And I actually don't mind them on our show. I do think sometimes we can be a little verbose in answering our icebreaker questions. And maybe we need to rein that in a little bit.
Okay, well, in that case, stop talking.
Okay.
It doesn't surprise me, though, that you're always willing to tell everybody two truths and a lie about yourself. That's probably your favorite one, in fact.
I do have my two truths and a lie. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we're not going to ask you that because that wasn't the question. And you just said we can't talk about ourselves too much. So anyway, today is Sunday, April 21st, as we record this podcast. Your San Francisco Giants are 10-13 after going 4-3 for the week and 2-2 against their, well, let's face it, their evil twins, the Arizona D-backs. And let's take a quick look at the standings to see where that leaves them at the current moment. Hold on, I got to scroll all the way to the bottom of the website here because East Coast bias. All right, here it is. That means that the San Francisco Giants are 2.5 games out of first place, but unfortunately in fourth place in the division. Oh, man. I haven't looked at the Rockies' record in a while. It's hard to believe that there's a team worse than the Rockies out there. Right. Talking about you, Chicago White Sox. They're already with a negative 55 run differential, and they're 7 games out with a 5-17. They are 12 games under 500 already. We haven't even played 24 games yet. Anyway, that's not why we're here. This is not a Rockies podcast. The San Francisco Giants are in fourth place, which just goes to show at least we're not Rockies fans. And in the wild card standings, things are actually worse. They are 3 games out of the last wild card spot, which is currently being held by, oh wow, let's see, the Phillies, the Cubs, and the Reds, and the Mets are tied with everybody. And I do want to point out the Mets started off 0-5, and all they've done is won a few extra baseball games, and now, Matthew, they're in a playoff spot, just like our San Francisco Giants would have been if they swept the D-bags, which they practically did. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, man. What? I'm going to ask Bob what you're drinking in right now, because this is...
Look, it was a lot closer than you think, Matthew. I know that the D-bags outscored the Giants in this series by like 10 runs.
Oh, man.
What was the differential? It was...
I'm not very good at math.
Like, it was, well, it was 16-2 minus, 4 and 7, 4, 8. So it was 10. Yes, it was 10 runs exactly, I think. I think the D-backs outscored the Giants by 10 runs. But you know what? It's not runs scored. It's games won. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the D-bag series and why it wasn't as bad as you think, San Francisco Giants fans. Except for some of you. Some of you are like, no, it was great. I loved it. And I'm with you. Then, later in the show, we're going to be talking about... Well, okay, look, it wasn't all sunshine and roses this past weekend. But one of the reasons it wasn't sunshine and roses is because there's been a part of the team that has been broken since opening day. And there are signs that it is slowly getting better and that some of those weaker parts are being sent back to the farm. In a baseball way, not in like a dog getting sent to the farm sort of way, just in case there was any confusion. But
there was no confusion.
Anyway, Bob, save me.
No, he's not going to save you because there's time for the trivia question.
Oh, man. Okay, Matthew, save me.
Yes, let's save Ben. It's time for the trivia question. So on, was it Sunday? I lose track now. Saturday, it was Patrick Bailey's bobblehead day. And Patrick Bailey is celebrated by almost hitting for the cycle. And in fact, in his fourth at bat, he hit a ball onto the warning track that maybe if it had bounced off the fence and back into the field, he definitely would have tried for 3, probably gotten thrown out by about 10 feet. But he was going for the cycle. And so it got me to thinking, who was the last Giant to hit for the cycle?
Mm.
So that is today's trivia question, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's Here's a good one. It's going to make people mad. It was a catcher. His name was AJ Pierzynski.
Man, bring it. Might as well bring up Aubrey Huff, too, man.
I think people like Huff more than they like Pierzynski.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And the fact that we have to listen to AJ Pierzynski every now and then actually describe what's going on a baseball game is also
right. It's brutal. Pain. Brutal. It reminds me of Joe Nathan every time I see his ugly face or hear his annoying voice. I think, oh, Joe Nathan. I like Joe Nathan so much.
Joe Nathan, he have 300 career saves? Joe Nathan?
Yeah, all of them not with the Giants. After they traded him for one AJ Pierzynski? Yeah, that Joe Nathan. Yeah.
Also, what, he started out as a shortstop, if I recall. Is that right?
I don't know.
Enough with the banter. Let's talk cocktails.
Here it is.
Thanks, Bob. Well, so I today, folks, am drinking a cocktail that was brought to my attention by friend of the show, Scott. Scott on Twitter, actually on Instagram, he sent me a recipe for a Kentucky Buck. And I knew of the Kentucky Buck, but we had never had this on our show. So today, I'm bringing that to the show. What's in a Kentucky Buck? Well, it's got one hulled strawberry, meaning one full strawberry with the green part taken out. And then 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 ounces of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, and 2 to 3 ounces of ginger beer. You're going to first muddle the strawberry until it's all smooshed up in a shaker. Then you're going to add the bourbon, the lemon juice, the simple syrup, and the bitters to a shaker with ice. And you're going to give it a good shake for about 10 seconds. Then you're going to double strain it. Very important to double strain it because you got all that strawberry gunk. You're going to double strain that into a highball glass filled with fresh ice. And then you're going to top it off with some ginger beer. I am using Cock and Bull ginger beer, which is a little sweeter. Fever Tree, which is a little drier, also an excellent choice. But you want it to be a good quality ginger beer. And then you're going to garnish it with a lemon slice and maybe a strawberry. So that's what I'm drinking today, Ben. It is a lovely just introduction to summer. It's got a nice balance between the sweet and the bitter. And it's really, really good with that ginger just coming forward. And so cheers, Ben. That's what I'm drinking.
That's a tasty cocktail.
Thanks, Bob. I think so. And thanks to Scott for bringing it to my attention.
What are you drinking, Ben?
Well, thank you for asking, Bob. That's very kind of you. Before I get into my cocktail, I just want to say this one little factoid. Matthew, did you know that when you take a Scott with your phone, you know,
yeah,
like a camera,
right? Uh-huh.
That's actually named after Scott.
It is.
Fact. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the Scottographers out there, bet you they don't know that either. Anyway, today I am drinking a margarita. To make a margarita, you go to the grocery store, you buy a bottle of margarita mix and the cheapest tequila that you can find. And then you combine those in your tub cup and just keep drinking until you wake up the next morning feeling bad about yourself.
Are you drunk?
Yeah, exactly, Bob. Is he drunk? I mean, because that's not how you make a margarita.
Oh, right. No, that's not how you make a margarita. I'm sorry. That's how some people make a margarita. Anyway, the way I made my margarita was 2 ounces of Blanco tequila, 1 ounce of Cointreau, 1 ounce of lime juice. And because I used Cointreau, which, by the way, is 40 proof, so maybe not do that with 2 ounces of Blanco tequila, because otherwise you'd just do what I ended up doing. You can also add a little bit of agave syrup. Now, if you're using a standard triple sec, that's going to be a little bit sweeter than a Cointreau. So you know, the agave syrup is optional. But anyway, you combine all of those ingredients in a shaker with ice. You shake until chilled. And then you can strain that into a rocks glass filled with fresh ice. And that's what I'm drinking today, Bob. A margarita.
That's a tasty cocktail.
It's one of the best. It's a classic.
It's a classic. It's very, very good. You know what wasn't so good, though, Ben? This weekend. And you can tell me that it was, mm-hmm. but I sat through the entire game Friday. And I deserve a medal. I deserve something. You know, back in the day, you millennials don't remember this, but you Gen Xers will. You know, when we were at Candlestick and you happened to stay for an extra inning game, night game at Candlestick, they would hand out these little pins as you were leaving called the Croix de Candlestick. And it was like this badge of honor for staying at that blizzard hellhole called Candlestick. And and I felt like on Friday night, I needed something like that. I needed that. Luckily, I was drinking, so it helped numb a little bit of the pain. But Friday was awful. And so you can't sit here in all good conscience and tell me that this was a good weekend.
I didn't say it was a good weekend. I said it was an informative weekend that helped us understand why the San Francisco Giants are good.
I don't think that's what you said, but okay, okay.
You know what?
When I edit this, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna let you know.
And then what? And then what? Text me.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm gonna do. In all caps.
Right, right. Well, you know what? I don't care what I said because it's a moving target. I can change things whenever I want, willy nilly. But here's the thing: you're skipping Thursday, which happened. First of all, okay, it happened.
That's true.
Thursday happened.
That's true.
And Thursday was an especially significant game, not just in the series, but also in the season, but also in helping Giants fans understand what makes this team good. Because my entire thesis for why this weekend demonstrates that the San Francisco Giants are a good team begins with this. The San Francisco Giants offense is not what makes this team good. It is its pitching and defense. Okay. And I know as baseball fans, the first thing that we always look to is offense, right? We think naively, or at least naive baseball fans think, that if a team is good at offense, then it is therefore just good. But in fact, we all know that oftentimes the opposite is true. When the team is good at pitching and defense, that's what makes it good. And the truth of the matter is you can be good going any direction. This team is good because of its pitching and defense, not because of its offense. And so Thursday's game, I think, helped reinforce that extremely well. But of course, and how does it do that? Well, Logan Webb. That is my first point, is Logan Webb and his absolutely amazing outing on Thursday night.
Right. With Logan Webb, we're going to win 20% of our games. Exactly.
That's right. That's right. And he had, a career high 19 batters retired in a row in that game and was just absolutely dominant. Starting to look, I mean, that might be the best Logan Webb we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is saying something, right? Because we've already seen him be very, very good. But it just means that he's good and getting better. And he is not just the ace of the San Francisco Giants, but one of the very, very best pitchers in all of baseball. And he's ours. And he's going to pitch every fifth day and give us a chance to win. Moreover, he's going to give us such a good chance to win that even our anemic offense can win those games. So I think Thursday is just a huge, that was like a pure game. But I will also point out they scored 5 runs in that game.
Yeah.
Now, did they do it against the kind of part of the rotation, the pitching staff that you would think? No. They were kind of getting shut down by the Ryan Nelson, and I don't know who he is, but he's a journeyman, or he's a rookie, or he's a whatever, right? But he's exactly the kind of guy that shuts the Giants down. So Yaz came along and did something brilliant. He beamed him with the ball, right?
That's right.
Yaz has done that a couple times this season. And hurt the guy so bad that the guy just, like, after getting the out, just walked off the field and walked straight into the clubhouse. By the way, he was put on the IL, but with a bruise. So he's going to be fine. But then they brought in some other scrub front of the bullpen reliever. They brought in their equivalent of Kaiwei Tang, Matthew. And what did he do to the San Francisco Giants?
Shut him down. Allowed one run in 4 innings.
That's right. But the Giants still broke through. They eventually scored way more runs than they needed, but put up just enough runs to give Logan Webb the win. And that Thursday night game, that is a prototypical win for the 2024 San Francisco Giants. So that's my first point. Now let's talk about Saturday.
Wait, you missed a day.
Saturday comes after Thursday.
It comes 2 days after Thursday.
That's what I said, after Thursday. All right, no. We got to talk about Friday. Do you have anything to say, or do you just want to be quiet while I?
Yeah, I don't. Okay, yes. Yeah, so first of all,
tell
just
me why
to go back,
Thursday's bad.
It wasn't bad, and I do say that I can't believe there are people out there that say that Logan Webb isn't an ace. And when you see a game like that, it's not usually Giants fans, but there are baseball fans out
there. I'm going to
fight them. That will argue that Logan Webb, because he doesn't strike a lot of players out and all that, isn't an ace. And but if you've seen him pitch, then you know you would know that the man is definitely undeniably our ace, even with two other Cy Young winners on our team. So anyway, getting to Friday.
Yeah. Let's get to Friday.
On Thursday, I spent some time talking about how I was worried that the Blake Snell that we're getting is not the Cy Young Blake Snell, but the other 7 years of his career Blake Snell. Right. And I don't know if we're even getting that, Ben. He started out the first couple innings. I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, he's looking good. Maybe he's turned the corner, but then inevitably he turned into the Blake Snell that we've been seeing for the beginning of the season. And I don't want to be right on this. I want Blake Snell to pitch like the Cy Young Award winner that we signed. Mm-hmm. But I'm every time I see this, I am disenchanted. Is that
you're disenchanted?
I am.
Yeah. Yeah,
I am. But on the flip side, Ben, he could have given up two runs and we still would have lost. He could have pitched a two run complete game, game, and we still would have lost. So I don't know if we can entirely blame the loss on Blake Snell.
Well, this is exactly my point, Matthew. First of all, let's talk a little bit about Blake Snell. Every team has a starter that you just kind of like cross your fingers and hope he doesn't get torched.
Yeah. Is every team paying that guy $35 million a year?
It doesn't matter how much money he's getting paid, Matthew. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Keaton Wynn is getting underpaid.
He is. Yeah.
Right? So it just means that Blake Snell is our fifth starter. He's the guy that you just close your eyes and pray. And that's the Blake Snell that we're getting right now. And you said he might be this is definitely the worst Blake Snell. But that's my other point. I mean, like, how much worse can it possibly be? This is it. This is the worst. This is the worst. Okay. And here's the good news, Matthew. First of all, a lot of people scared us by saying that, he was still in his spring training mode.
Yeah.
But the good thing about Friday's game was, and this is why Friday's game was good, is that we saw Jordan Montgomery pitch. And Jordan Montgomery had even a shorter of a spring training than Blake Snell did, and he looked fine. Now, granted, he was facing the San Francisco Giants offense, so he probably looked a little bit better than he actually is. But the point is, he looked decent against a team that's probably, in the bottom third, but not at the total bottom of major league offenses. And he was very effective against them. So that means that if Jordan Montgomery had enough time to get ready, then Blake Snell's had more than enough time to get ready. Okay, so that means we're only into our 9-game waiting period. And the good news is, Matthew, we're now 1/3 of the way through the 9 games that we have to wait till the good Blake Snell shows up.
Well, that's such great news.
Listen, he was abysmal for 9 games last year and he won the Cy Young Award. And maybe I'm not selling this hard enough, but the point is like, look, Blake Snell is a way better pitcher than this, and he's gonna get better. He's gonna get better because you can't get much worse than this. But also, like, the other four spots in the rotation are performing so well that why are we all getting worked up about this spot in the rotation being bad? It's not our money, and it's not like the other four spots in the rotation are acting like they're not better, that they're all, like, threes or better, right? I think between Wynn, Hicks, Harrison, and Webb, we've got threes and better. Like, I think Harrison's a number three. Everybody else is pitching at number two level or above. And so right now, Blake Snell is our number five guy, and he's not always going to be that. I'm not guaranteeing you that he's going to win the Cy Young Award, but I'm guaranteeing you that he's going to pitch at a fourth or fifth guy level for most of the season. And if he doesn't, we do have Mr. Cobb coming back. Maybe. I don't know. Like, he was doing better and then he was doing worse because he started to have all these aches and pains. I'm wondering, Matthew, does anybody told Alex Cobb that he might just be old?
Well, that's why
his shoulder hurts?
I think that's certainly part of it, right? He's not the young chicken anymore.
Yeah. Well, because then get out there and throw the ball, old man. That's the problem. You don't know you're an old man. Like, I get out of bed every day and three things hurt. You know, and it's always my back, and it's often like my ankle and my knee and my wrist. If my arm's been hanging off the bed or my elbow, you know, like something's always hurting. That's just your life now, Alex. And so, like, it's fine. You're fine. But anyway, we got him and Robbie Ray coming back. And so, like, I think, you know, if worse turns to worse, then we still got lots of help coming. And the rest of the starting rotation is performing quite well. Now, I know that's not what made Friday look so bad. What made Friday look so bad was the 17-1 score. And here's the thing. Like, once Blake Snell imploded, they threw out Kaiwei Tang. And then they followed him. Well, they brought in Roop. And here's the thing. As much as you and I both like Roop and Miller, they're still young guys, and they're going to have their bad outings, just like everybody in the bullpen does. But I'm not ready to say that either Roop or Miller isn't the real deal, right? They both had one bad outing. They both happened this weekend. That's fine. But when it comes to Tang and Nick Avila,
yeah. There's not a lot to like so far.
No.
And really not a lot to be excited about.
Correct. But, you know, Luke Jackson is going to come back soon. Sean Jelly came back. We forgot completely about Sean Jelly.
We did.
On this show. And he came back and he's healthy and is, you know, and he replaced Kaiwei Tang. So Kaiwei Tang has already gone back to the minor leagues. Sean Jelly is back and demonstrated today why he is so much better than Tang. And Nick Avila is probably going to go down when Luke Jackson comes back. So that's why, I mean, Friday was bad, but it wasn't as bad as it seemed, right? It was that those 17 runs just were just like most 12 of them were just forget about it. 12 of those runs just went back to the minor leagues. Of those runs.
I was going to say nine. Yeah.
Nine of those runs went back to the, you know, in my mind, Roop was fine on Friday. That was just a blip. It was just
it
a blip. And it was
okay.
A blip in a game that didn't really matter because Snell had already given it away.
Yeah.
But my point is that game was not nearly as bad as it looked. And Snell is probably going to get better. And really, you're right. The worst thing about Friday night was the offense. And the offense, Matthew, well, we already know what the offense is. Sometimes, often, it's going to score one or two runs. And those are going to be losses. You know, and that's just the way this offense is. When they only score one or two runs, they're going to lose. And that's because this offense isn't good. But nobody is out there saying this team is going to win 90 games, except you.
I'm going to amend that. I no longer think that. I'm disenfranchised, remember?
Or disenchanted. That's right. You're disenchanted. You know, so like, you know, I think my main argument is that Friday wasn't as bad as it seems. And then it was followed up by Saturday, which was I think we all wish that Saturday was how this team played every day.
Yeah.
Right? Because that was where the offense just scored. They scored early, they scored middle, and they scored late.
Yeah.
We had a serviceable outing by Harrison. It wasn't his best, but it was good enough to win. And then the bullpen came in and was very, very good.
And we also had our first kayak hit of Oracle Park history.
That's right. That's right. It was not a splash hit, but it was a kayak hit. The only splash hit to never splash. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. And there's been 103 of them.
Right. So I would say, yeah, So my point is, Matthew, that Saturday's game, I should wash away more than wash away everything that happened on Friday.
It did. I felt good about that. I felt like, this is the way we were playing,
right.
Scoring just enough. I mean, you know, watching Patrick Bailey have his day, and it was a great day. Then Saturday or Sunday comes along. And did I tell you that I'm not a big fan of roller coasters in my older age? Like I can't, you know, the ups and the downs, the violence of it, I get nauseous and it's just, I don't really enjoy it. And so I'm not really enjoying the roller coaster ride that is the Giants season.
You're not going to enjoy the season.
It's torture, isn't it? It's torture all
this
over
is torture.
Again.
This is 2010 all over again, but possibly worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so I guess Sunday was for me, I came in with high hopes because, you know, Jordan Hicks has been pitching so well, and then it was a clear indication that obviously not everybody's going to have their A game all the time. And to his credit, he battled and he gave up a lot of walks and hit a batter or two and just was not the Jordan Hicks that we've seen so far this season, but still only gave up one run and five innings. And so, was that right? One run, five innings?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in fact, he was the pitcher of record for the win after five innings because the Giants scored two runs off the Yaz homer, and all of a sudden we were in the lead. And so what the problem was with Sunday's game was that the bullpen wasn't deep enough to handle the fact that Hicks only went five. And we had to see Nick Avila pitch in a very high leverage situation. And as soon as I saw him on the mound, I mean, I texted you, I knew that this was going to be the end.
Well,
of the game.
As I said on Thursday, Nick's going to give up a run. Like he generally is, I mean, probably not every game, but he is somewhere between, his ERA is somewhere between 4.5 and 9, right? Like more innings than not, he's going to give up a run. You pretty much know that. And I know today he had a bad call. He had a bad call, but let's face it, that was one pitch.
Yeah, right? He was already in trouble when that call was made. And so
right. I mean, if that guy takes that pitch, you know,
right.
then you know, it's not like he didn't dig himself a hole and then needed an escape. Right? That's exactly what happened. And the break didn't go his way. And you know what? If you don't get yourself into trouble, it doesn't matter as much when the breaks don't go your way.
Yeah. Okay. But now that I'm thinking about this, so I think your little pep talk is starting to work because I'm thinking about this. So Nick Avila, the reason that he was in a game in a high leverage situation is because the Giants have played a lot of games in a row and they still have three more to go. They have the Mets series starting on Monday. And so he has to pitch, right? I mean, they can't throw in their other guys every day. And so they had to put him in there. I think I read somewhere Susan Slusser had mentioned that they expect Luke Jackson back this week.
Right.
And he's already pitching rehab assignments in I think, San Jose and is due back this week. So in that respect, some of the biggest problems that we've been having with Kaiwei Tang and Nick Avila not being able to hold or at least keep deficits
they
manageable.
Can't keep them in the game.
Yeah, right. Can't keep them in the game. Is gone now, and we might have some pitchers that can actually do that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That part of the bullpen, those two guys were out of their depth, and now with Jelly coming back healthy, and with Luke Jackson coming back healthy, Now you have guys that aren't out of their depth. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have guys give up runs or lose games, but they're going to be competitive and they're going to do it less often than not, unlike Avila and Tang, who were pretty much a sure thing that they were going to give up runs. And so yeah. And if that doesn't happen, if Nick Avila doesn't give up those runs and everything else remains the same, the Giants are still playing. Right? Because they scored that run in the bottom of the ninth, and that would have tied the game. But also, there are two other reasons why they lost that game that they probably shouldn't have. Right? Like, Hicks not performing to his normal level, but battling through. Right? He walked a bunch of guys. He gave up some runs, more runs than he normally would. So that was unusual. So there's a reason why they should have won the game, ignoring what Nick Avila did. Right? If Hicks is better, they win the game. If Avila comes in, they have a better chance. They have a 50-50 chance or better of winning the game. And something else happened. Because in that game, Matthew, there were two unearned runs due to errors made by Nick Ahmed and Matt Chapman, a gold glover and a platinum glover, who have both played way better than that this year, right? That is not going to be the norm. So you look at that game, and that game was really... The Diamondbacks are lucky. They're lucky that they won that game. They're lucky that Hicks had a game that was substandard. They're lucky that they had a bullpen that was overworked and had to throw a guy out there, a quadruple A guy out there. And they're lucky that Nick Ahmed and Matt Chapman both made errors that led to runs. They're lucky. The Giants should have won that game through any one of those 3 points. And so I know it's disappointing that the offense didn't come through and just only scored 3 runs. But the point is, if the offense had scored 3 runs and any of those other 3 things didn't happen, the Giants probably win this game.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
so, and that's it. You know, Blake Snell's not crap. And you don't have all of these things, you know? It's like, you know, last year's reigning Cy Young Award winner should win that game. And then Sunday's game, the Diamondbacks got very lucky. The Giants should have won that game. And that's why they should have gone 4-0 in the series.
Okay. Well, yes, you're right. This team is going to win on pitching and defense. And so when those two things don't show up at the same time, the chances of them winning go down significantly. And we saw that on Sunday. I think even yes. Hicks contributed to that. I mean, Hicks had a comebacker to him where he had an easy double play set up and he decides to go to third to get the force out there. And Chapman had to race over to the bag to even get that out. Mm. And so to me, I mean, that was a mental error more than anything else. Right. But those are the types of errors that the Giants can't afford to give up. They can't give up extra outs. They can't give up just extra base runners.
Right. Well, they can't afford to, but I also think we shouldn't expect them not to. Right. And I know less about Hicks' defensive abilities than I know about Ahmed's and Chapman's. So I'm going to give him a pass on that. I'm going to say, you know what I really wish Hicks had done better is I wish he hadn't walked so many guys.
Yeah. Okay.
And I expect Chapman and Ahmed to not both make errors in the same game. Right. And certainly I expect them both not to make errors. And I expect them both to be brilliant defenders. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, Sunday's game, when you look at it really closely and you look at all of these different things, you think to yourself, wow, the Giants really should have won this game. If they hadn't made any one of these mistakes in one of these 3 areas, they probably would have won the game.
Right.
And all 3 of those areas, I think we can expect to be better as the season goes on. And none of those areas is that we should expect them to score more runs. Because we shouldn't. Yes, they can. They certainly can score 7 or 8 runs. But that's kind of like, you know, sometimes the moon blocks out the sun and there's this thing called the eclipse. You know, like it happens.
Well, yeah, and we went over this last on Thursday, but I think the way the Giants have scored runs this week or this year have been sometimes they're going to score 2. Sometimes they're going to score 7 and they're more likely to score 2 than 7. So I think that, you know, the average might be 4 to 4.5 runs, but we're certainly not going to see 4, 4.5 runs. Yeah. It seems like we're kind of going up and down, up and down. Like we ride a hot bat one day and then the next nobody's hitting. And so it just seems like that's kind of the team that we're going to get offensively.
It's feast or famine with this offense. And most of the time it's going to be famine. Now, I would say what you probably want to try to do if we get to that point is find a bat, right, at the trade deadline. Because I think that's the one thing that could move the needle. But we're a long ways from that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love to see that bat right now. I mean, and maybe it's Mike Yastrzemski and Austin Slater both getting hot at the same time so that right field is better. But we shouldn't expect that, you know, should expect this team to win. That's what I'm saying.
Right, right. And I think just quickly on that point around finding a bat, I think you're right. I think it is Yastrzemski and Slater because you're not getting rid of both of them. Or at least the Giants aren't. And even if they do go out and get a bat, where is that bat going to play besides right field, right? You're not going to replace Soler in the DH. You're not going to replace Chapman or even Ahmed defensively. So I don't know where that offense is going to fit.
Well,
maybe it's Conforto, but he's been one of our better hitters. So
he hasn't been, right? He's cooling off. He's cooling off. Like, you know, don't overemphasize the first 2 weeks of the season, right? Don't think that because Conforto was good for the first 2 weeks of the season, therefore he's going to be good for the rest of the year, right?
Right.
Like, don't make that mistake. I think the corners of the outfield are the two obvious places. But anywhere else that they make a change, they're going to have to make sure that they're not hindering the defense because that is what this team is built upon. Now, yeah, and I think Tyro is playing really good defense right now. So I think that includes second base, center field, third, and shortstop, and catcher, right? Like, those guys are all locked in for sure. And you're really actually getting good offensive performance right now out of Lamont May Jr., so I don't see why you would want to do anything to hinder his at-bats either. And Soler is like, you know what Soler hasn't done? He hasn't hit a lot of clutch home runs, which is what we really need and want him to do. But honestly, when you look at his stats, he's not that bad anymore. He's kind of like slowly heated up. It's just, he's just not hitting. He's hitting his home runs when they lose 17-1, right? Not when they win, you know, 4-3. And so we need some more of that performance out of him before we start feeling comfortable with him. But honestly, his stats aren't that bad.
We look at the last week, and I'm just looking at quickly at the offense for the last week. Tyro Estrada's batting league average. He's batting .240. The only players that are batting under .240 right now for the last week were Wilmer Flores, Michael Conforto, Austin Slater, and Tyler Fitzgerald. Oh, and Tom Murphy, who's
right, whatever.
Had such a great spring and then hasn't really been able to hit himself out of a paper bag.
I mean, he plays like once every 6 games. Like, what, you know?
Every 3 or 4 games, man.
Whatever. Whatever you get. Okay, look, like, don't sit around here and complain about your backup catcher not hitting.
No, you're right.
Never.
I'm not complaining about him. I just don't even hear it. I expected more, Ben.
Okay, you expected more out of your backup catcher than maybe you should have kept Joey Bart.
Oh, well, there's that.
He played two games in a row and had his first offer.
Hey! So the Giants did trade for somebody this week.
Yes, they did. They did.
It was a typical Farhan trade, and they traded for a reliever named Mitch White from the Blue Jays, who had been DFA'd. So the Giants traded for him for cash.
Yep.
And I always think it's funny when they say cash considerations. Like, what are they considering? Like, what kind of cash? Like, is this like, oh, we'll pay you later kind of thing? Like, I don't really know.
I always thought of it meaning like cash considerations where it's just sort of in like assets. Like, we don't know. I mean, the Giants might have sent them like a bunch of like half empty printer cartridges.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, because you know how expensive printer cartridges are, right? And you like, you know, and sometimes like when you try to refill them with the syringe, the computer's all like, this is not a valid, blah, 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 blah. You know, they sent them legit DRM'd printer cartridges that were half full of ink.
Okay.
So that's what they got.
That was the take. Okay.
I would take one of those.
I would too, actually, because they're expensive. But Mitch White, who was a decidedly below average reliever for the last few years. The only thing that I could see is that he was in the Dodger organization when Farhan was there.
That explains
it. So that explains why they brought him over.
Somebody wrote, I can't remember who it was, Baggerly, Brisby, Pavlovich, Slusser. Somebody wrote, I'm surprised he wasn't a Giant already. Sounds like a Brisby thing to say.
It does say, but yeah. And so Mitch White is now in AAA. He's on the 40-man, which is why they put Alex Cobb on the 60-day IL, was to free a spot up for Mitch White. So we could see him. I hope not. I hope that Luke Jackson comes in and then they're good for the time being. But we do have another, arm on the 40-man that could conceivably come up.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the many wheels that are turning, because we did talk about this already, but in terms of the bullpen changing, right? Sean Jelly came back. We had totally forgot about him on this show, but we are relieved to see him back. And Luke Jackson, yes, coming back. And then they made this trade for this guy, Mitch. What was his name?
Mitch White.
That's right. They made a trade for Mr. White. And the corresponding move was to put Alex Cobb onto the 60-day IL, which freed up a spot on the 40-man roster. Now, that probably means, Cobb has had a number of setbacks recently. He had a setback not related to his hip, right? One was his shoulder hurting, and then the other one was, I think, an elbow. Yeah, he had pain in his elbow, and then he had pain in his shoulder. And none of these injuries seem to be, major setbacks, right? They're all minor setbacks, and it really sounds like now Cobb is going to be back basically at the time that they said he was going to be back when he first had the surgery. But the point is that, all that hope that we had that he was going to come back early is now gone. And the earliest he can come back is late May, May 22nd, I heard.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing, but at the same time...
Coming back would have really added, it would have forced the Giants to make some moves, because... where are you going to put him? Who's going to be going to the bullpen or being?
Well, it would have forced. Yeah, I mean, I think it would have to be Keaton,
right? Which he doesn't
have to be
deserve,
Keaton Wynn,
right?
And he doesn't deserve it. No, but they're certainly not going to put Snell in the bullpen until August, late July. I think late July is the earliest that we So for those of you who are wondering, how many bad starts do we need to see out of Blake Snell before he goes to the bullpen? And I'm telling you, late July. It's going to be after the All-Star game before Blake Snell goes to the bullpen. They're going to have to be good and sure that he stinks. So just hold on to your rear ends. But just think of him as your number five starter. Take a deep breath and it'll all be okay. Blake Snell is your number five starter. It's not your money. It's not your money. Okay?
Okay.
But that does mean if Cobb comes back, it's Wynn going to the bullpen, not Snell. And it would have created some hard choices. But you know what? I would much rather, if you're telling me Keaton Wynn's coming into the game to get some outs, I'd be like, yeah. I'm feeling way more confident than when you bring out Nick Avila. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, no, absolutely. I think that there's a lot of good things that have been happening in areas that have been problems. So you were right. We can definitely be a little bit more enthusiastic about that.
So there you go. We're fixing the one thing that can be fixed. The one thing that was has been a problem that can be fixed is that front part of the bullpen, and it is getting fixed. We can see the pieces coming in, and it's starting to become a logjam where we're making choices where we're like, oh, we have too many good things, right? That is coming very, very soon. That starts as soon as Luke Jackson is healthy. Now, we all got to cross our fingers and hope that it continues to stay that way, that people stay healthy and we never see Mitch White. But Mitch White will make an appearance if something goes wrong, which to me says, what is Mitch White, a right-hander?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, I guess, but Tang and Avila are both as well. So Mitch White he's going to be the next guy who gets a shot, right? It's not going to be Tang or Avila.
Well, no, exactly, because they've gotten their opportunity. Right, and we've seen what they can do.
So he's going to go into the carousel, and then it's going to be White who gets a shot. But really, he's just there to hold a spot until we get past the period of time where they become ready to bring up some of these early prospects, right? Like Wizenhunt and Mason Black. You know, but the question is, do they want to bring those guys up as relievers? I don't know. But maybe they'll have no choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only other guys they have on the 40 man that are pitchers besides that we haven't seen already is Randy Rodriguez and now Mitch White. So, I think those guys are we're just as likely to see them as they are to be DFA'd for when Robbie Ray and Cobb come back.
Right. I think once the Giants are ready to commit to this season and probably let some of these minor leaguers start their clocks, like Black and Wizenhunt, especially, but anybody else who might raise their head as a contender, we have to be past the deadline, which I think is approaching fairly soon. Right. There's the deadline where they get a year of service.
Yeah.
Which I think is coming pretty soon. They have to be past that deadline. And the Giants probably won't bring them up. But they also have to be like, yes, this is the piece that we need to continue to contend, right? Like, we need to shore up the bullpen, and if we do, we'll still be in it. They have to have proven that. And until then, I don't think we're going to see any help from any of these great prospects. It's going to be the Whites, the Tangs, the Avilas, the Rodriguezes until then. And let's just hope we don't need them. Let's hope the bullpen stays healthy. Because bullpens always stay 100% healthy, right, Matthew?
Right. Well, in other words, we're going to see somebody.
Sure. Yeah, we are. But hopefully, like right now we're in a position where we have Tang and Avila. I think just having that one guy that you don't trust is much better than having two guys that you don't trust.
Yes, absolutely. Because we kept seeing Tang and Avila when we
we saw them every time the game was out of reach. It was those two guys, and then
seems
boom.
To be a lot lately, yeah.
Well, and then boom, we were forced to put him into a game where they did matter because it was close. And you really want to see Miller and Roop when it's close and you're losing, right?
Right.
Those are the guys that we want to see, but there's been a lot of those games. But there's going to be a lot of those games because the offense doesn't score a lot of runs. So, you know.
All right. Why'd you have to say that? You're supposed to end on a positive note.
I know. No, I'm not. You're supposed to have taken over by now.
Okay, on that note, folks, the Giants will score just enough runs as the pitching gets healthy and it will all be okay.
That's right.
All right. That's the whole point of today's episode. Walk away with that. This weekend was kind of a microcosm of our season. You're going to have some highs. You're going to have some lows. And as Ben said off air before we started, there was a fifth Diamondback game.
That's right.
That one could have either gone well for the Giants or poorly for the Giants, which is exactly where we're at with kind of the season, right? We could either go up or down. Well, but we're kind of
right.
The opportunity is there.
We saw that we're at least a 500 team. And if that fifth game would tell us whether or not we're making the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's time for the answer to today's trivia question, Ben. Mm-hmm. So the question was, who was the last San Francisco Giant to hit for the cycle? And Ben, it was a while ago.
It was
in September 15th, 2011. The Panda, Pablo Sandoval, hit for the cycle.
He was also the last switch hitter. Is he a switch hitter?
I guess, I think he is.
Also, he's the emergency catcher. So he was the last catcher to do it.
That's right. I think he has like one inning in his life, in his career as catcher. The Giants, interestingly enough, as a ball club, are tied for the second most cycles in major leagues franchise history with 23 cycles. They are tied with the Boston Red Sox. Mm. This dates back to 1883.
Oh, wow.
The Pittsburgh Pirates have the most with 24. So the next cycle we have will tie us with the Pirates for the most in Major League history.
So we almost tied the Pirates. If that ball had hit the wall, we would have tied the Pirates. We would not have. He was going to get thrown out. I saw the replay. The helmet came off midway between first and second when he started high-tailing. Just because the helmet comes off does not mean you're running fast. Okay. When your helmet flies off your head, that does not. I know you look fast, you know, but you're not running fast. He was going to get so thrown out. But it would have been amazing.
It would have been amazing. It would have been fun. So the Panda in 2011. So it's been a while. In the majors, you get about 5 or 6 cycles every year on average. So could be us. Who knows? We'll see.
All right.
Looking ahead, Ben, we've got the Mets coming into town, who are that third wild card team. They lost their first 5 games of the season, but are 12-4 since then.
It could be us. Could be us.
It could be us. Could be the Giants. And go back to that fifth game and go look at Twitter, like Mets Twitter and maybe the Locked On Mets podcast. And oh man, they were the season was done. And it was going to be the worst season ever.
It was internal. It was even their own internal media. They were like, oh, this is rock bottom. It was bad.
And now they've been 12-4. They are right in the thick. Well, they are in a wild card spot as we speak. So that's who we got going against. We'll see how that plays out. And then notable Giants that have played for both teams, Ben. Daryl Strawberry was a Giant. Some people may or may not remember that.
I do remember that.
Wilmer Flores was a Met. Remember him crying on the infield when he thought that he'd been traded early in his career as a Met. Jeff Kent, of course, was a Met. Kevin Mitchell was a Met. But the worst of all, the worst Giant-Met combination in history is that Willie Mays ended his career with the New York Mets.
Well, so he could end his career back in New York, Matthew. And the Mets are orange because of the Giants.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been a Met, though, man.
Can you believe that? The Mets are blue and orange because of the Dodgers and the Giants. They're like some sort of disgusting
love child thing. Yeah.
Oh, God, wasn't even to say that. I was going to be like some genetic engineering abomination. Love child. Never. God,
hate child. All right, folks, don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Remember, you can actually listen to us on YouTube now, where you can hit that little notification bell to tell you when we go. We're not going live. It'll be our recording, but you can listen to us on YouTube. Don't forget to rate us if you haven't done so already. It really helps the show. And follow us on the socials, where we got the platform formerly known as Twitter. We got Instagram, we got Threads, and Mastodon, where we post our recipes. Thanks for following, Ben. It's been good chatting with you. Until next time, cheers, my friend.
Cheers, Matthew. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Giant Cocktails Podcast. Until next time, bottoms up.
Love child. Giants Dodger love child. You know what? There's so many of them out there.